The Book Nook on WISO is made possible by five local library systems in Southwest Ohio: the Greene County Public Library, Washington Centerville Public Library, Clark County Public Library, the Dayton Metro Library, and the Wright Memorial Public Library.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and I'd like to welcome to the program today Claire McIntosh. She joins us by telephone from beautiful Southern California. Hello, Claire.
Hello.
Claire, I've been after you for a long time, and here you are. We finally tracked you down. Listeners probably recognize that you have a slight bit of an accent. Where do you live?
You noticed that, right?
Yeah.
So I'm British. I come from a place near Oxford in the UK, and I currently live in North Wales.
Oh, beautiful. Well, you put out a book last year, and I tried to get you on the show for that. I know it just came out in paperback, and it's called I Let You Go. And
that's right.
That was your first novel, wasn't it?
It was, yes.
And man, you had a twist in there that was so elaborate and so slick and so smooth. As a reader, I felt like you had just yanked the tablecloth off the table and left all the fine china sitting there. I was so impressed with this twist that you threw in. And that book got some great press and some great readership, didn't it?
Thank you. It's it has done so well. I'm really stoked, as we'd say. I never expected it to sell as well as it has, but in the UK we've topped 500,000 copies, and it's selling well in the States, 35 countries around the world. So it's a real dream come true.
Well, if you don't mind, since I've read both your books, let's talk about the first one and then go into the second one that's just come out. Okay.
Sure.
Okay. Now, in I Let You Go, you get the title from the fact that this woman is walking along the street, and she's got a little boy with her son, and they're holding hands, and she lets go of his hand for just a second, and suddenly a speeding car comes by and hits him.
That's right, and so that hit and run is then the catalyst for the story. We then we follow two storylines from that point. So we follow the police investigation as they try to find the driver of the car. And we follow Jenna, who is traumatized by what's happened. She's grieving. She's very badly damaged. And she leaves her hometown to start afresh. And she goes to a very remote part of the Welsh coast and basically hides out and tries to start life again.
And is she hiding out in a place kind of like where you must live now?
Well, yeah. I wasn't living there when I wrote the book.
Okay.
But I love Wales. I've always loved Wales. And I guess I was drawn to it even more after writing about such beautiful countryside.
Well, I love the way you draw us in as readers. And when we get to the twist part, we are so shocked and so surprised because it completely jumbles up our perception of what we've been reading. A lot of us have to go back and reread it to try to figure it out.
It's it was fun to write, and it was a real challenge to write because you're spot on with what you say. It really is about playing with perceptions, and so I had to be really careful about the phrasing, and there are some parts of the book where it really comes down to almost down to the punctuation that's used, and that had to be absolutely accurate because if it wasn't, the twist wouldn't work. So it was quite a challenging book to write.
In case you're just tuning in, you're listening to the Book Nook on WYSO. I've been joined by Claire McIntosh on the telephone. We're talking about her first novel, which recently came out in paperback. It's called I Let You Go. And Claire, I understand that you have some firsthand knowledge about this kind of stuff because aren't you a former police officer?
I am. I was a police officer in the UK for 12 years. And in fact, the year that I joined the police, it was 1999, and very shortly afterwards, there was a hit and run in Oxford that killed a young boy. And although my novel is fiction, I haven't based it on that real life case, but I was really affected by this hit and run. I couldn't understand how anybody could drive away from the scene of something like that and live with the knowledge that they'd killed a child. And I thought a lot about the mother as well and wondered how anybody could live after losing a child. It seemed unimaginable to me. I was in my early 20s. And then it was about 10 years later, I lost my own son in very different circumstances. And again, I started to think about that mother in that hit and run all those years ago. And I realized that, of course, you do survive something like that, but it changes you. And it was those changes that I wanted to explore in this book.
Oh, my. Oh, my. Clara, how did you make the transition from police officer to novelist?
Well, it wasn't something that I'd planned, really. I was working full-time and working very long hours. I had three small children at home, and I was never seeing them. And it just wasn't right for me. I thought I could combine the two. I thought I could have it all. And actually, I realized I wasn't having it all. I was just sort of doing it all and not terribly well. And so I decided to take a career break. And the only thing that I knew I could do from home to earn money was to write. And so I started writing for magazines and newspapers. I wrote for businesses. I wrote social media copy. Anything anyone would pay me to write, yeah, I wrote. And it meant I could do the school run and I could be there for the kids if they were sick or if they needed me. And so I did that for a year or so and started writing the first draft of I Let You Go. And then just before I was due to go back to work as a police officer, I'd taken a two-year break. I got a two-book publishing deal, and so that was sort of the confidence that I needed to become a full-time writer permanently.
Well, I'm guessing that your publisher got some confidence, too, after the response to this first book, I Let You Go. And now we have this second book, I See You, which just came out. And, Claire, I read a lot of really creepy books, but I think this is one of the creepiest books I've ever read.
I'm delighted to hear that I creeped you out. It's a really unsettling premise, I think, and I felt quite creeped out myself when I was writing it.
All right. What's the premise?
Okay, so the way this came about was I went into London with a friend of mine who is a commuter, and she made me stand at a very precise point on the platform. And when I asked why, she explained that if we stood in that exact space, when the train came in and the doors opened, we would be exactly in front of the doors and we would be able to get the very last couple of seats available. And sure enough, that's exactly what happened. And so I did this journey with her and she could have done it blindfolded. And I realized that all over the world, in cities, there are commuters doing exactly the same thing every single day, crossing the road at the same point, picking up a free newspaper from a stand, taking the same escalator at the same time. Because we're all creatures of habit. We have our routines. It's familiar. But I don't know if it was the crime writer in me or the former cop in me, but immediately I started thinking about the risks that presented if we do the same thing every day. And so that is the concept of I See You. And it begins with a woman, Zoe, who's coming home from work on the tube, on the London Underground, and she flicks through a newspaper. And when she gets to the back, to the classifieds, she sees a photograph within an advert in the classifieds in this newspaper, and the photograph is of her. And so she sets out to find out why it's there.
And then we have another viewpoint. We switch back and forth between the viewpoint of Zoe and this officer who has kind of seen her career go off kilter.
Yes. Kelly, oh, I love Kelly. Kelly Swift is a young, very passionate, very dynamic police officer who has a bit of a temper, and she's specifically wound up by a particular type of offender. So several years before the book happens, before the book starts, Kelly's twin sister was attacked when she was at university. And Kelly was on the phone to her when this happened and feels very responsible for something that actually she had no control over. But she was really traumatized by this attack. And whereas her sister, in fact, has moved on and is married, has a family, it has really put it behind her. Kelly has been unable to do that, and it was the driving force behind her joining the police. And whenever she comes into contact with that particular type of offender that treats women in the way that she imagines her sister's attacker treats women, she starts to lose her temper. And so actually when we join her, she has been bumped off her role as a detective. She's in uniform again. She's not in a particularly great place, but she is the only person that takes Zoe Walker seriously. When Zoe comes to her with this photograph, because in fact, the next day after Zoe's seen her photograph, she sees another photograph in the newspaper and she recognizes that image as being a woman who was on the news who had her bag stolen from when she was asleep on the train. And so she makes this link between crimes that are happening to women in London, and Kelly, Detective Kelly Swift, is the only one who believes her and sets about starting the investigation.
The fact that she is observing pickpockets and thieves in the tube, though, she's not really much of a detective at that point. She's kind of been demoted to the point where she's just kind of working for the underground as just sort of a traffic cop, isn't she?
I suppose it is the kind of the equivalent of a traffic cop. I actually did a job very much like that, although not on trains. I did it in cafes and nightclubs, and so I was undercover watching, basically waiting to have my bag stolen, or watching for other people having their bag stolen. So Kelly has done a little bit of that, and now she's in uniform and she is just doing this sort of the very basic police work. But once she gets her teeth into this job that Zoe brings to her, she manages to sort of inveigle her way onto the murder squad that is now dealing with what has become a very serious series of crimes against women.
You were actually working as a decoy, hoping someone would steal your purse. Did you get all dressed up to go clubbing to do that?
Yeah, we did. I did it for about 6 months, and it was the coolest job I've ever had, because I was quite junior. But yeah, there were three or four of us on this tiny unit, and we were called the Dip Squad, because you imagine sort of dipping your hand into someone's bag to take a wallet. And we would take it in turns to be either the decoy or the observer or the arrest team. And often I was a decoy, and I would sit in Starbucks with my coffee and my laptop or my phone or my purse or, you know, whatever it was down by my side, and wait to be robbed. It sounds very peculiar now, but it was a really fun job, and we got some good results.
So they actually did try to steal your stuff, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. And we'd go to nightclubs, and you know how women have a terrible habit of putting their purses down, you know, when they're dancing. Uh-huh. And so we did a lot of that. And often, not always, but often got an arrest.
So Kelly, at the beginning, is kind of been demoted down to what you call the Dip Squad. She's watching for these thieves, and apparently the subway system in London, this is a real problem there.
It is, and I don't want to malign the London Underground, because London remains a relatively safe city. It's a great city to live and work in, but like any city and like any subway system, there are thieves and vagabonds, and so it is a problem, and you do need to keep your personal possessions very close.
I have a fond memory of being an American tourist in the London subway, and I was going to see the London Music Festival at Alexandra Palace, and I was waiting for the train. And this was back in the hippie days. I had this leather side purse on my belt, and suddenly I felt my hip moving just slightly. And I looked down, and there's a guy standing next to me, and he's got his hand in it.
Wow.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
What did you do?
I said, "What are you doing?" And he took off. There wasn't really anything in there of value, fortunately. But
gosh,
yeah,
that's quite scary. I there are some really, really brilliant pickpockets, and a lot of them work in teams. So, you know, some of them will cause a distraction.
Uh-huh.
You know, they might drop their own bag, and everyone's, you know, trying to see what's happening and help people. And then the rest of the team are just moving through the crowd, picking pockets, even sort of slicing the bottom of bags so that they can take the contents out. They're very, very clever.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that, because when that happened to me, there was a disturbance, and about 20 young people came in and were milling around when this guy tried to take my stuff.
Ah, well, there you go.
And I think maybe it was orchestrated.
I'm quite sure it would have been.
But we digress. We're talking to Claire McIntosh about her book, I See You, and it's got this great shot of a woman on the cover going up an escalator. I'm assuming she's coming up from the subway platform, and it's really ominous. And your whole thing, knowing what I discovered about you in your first book, your whole thing is creating these brilliant twists. So I was ready in this new book, and I'm reading it, and I'm thinking, okay, how's she going to do the twist? Because I know it's coming. And when we finally get to the end of the book, after you've executed several really great twists, we get to the last couple of pages, and I said to myself, maybe there's another book in this. Maybe we're not done with this story.
Well, I certainly have no plans to write a sequel. I like books that leave you feeling slightly unfinished. I think it's a fine balance. You need to feel satisfied at the end of a book, but I think it's quite good when there's a tiny little question mark or just a hint that actually there's more to this story. But I prefer to leave that to everybody's imagination, so I won't be writing a sequel, I don't think.
Okay, well, never say never.
Okay.
You know, after they've made this into a film, you know, you might... I'm just kidding. I think it'd look great on a film. I think this...
It would be good, wouldn't it? Yeah. We're in talks at the moment with various production companies, mostly in LA, which is really exciting. So watch this space.
All right. In case you're just tuning in, you're listening to 91.3 WYSO, giving voice to our community, our nation, and our world. We've been joined by Claire McIntosh. She joins us from La Jolla, California, on the telephone, and we're talking about her new novel, which is called I See You. Okay, let's talk about this creepy internet stalking stuff. A big part of your story is the fact that in the UK, you've got these cameras everywhere. They're everywhere. The CCTV, aren't they?
Yeah, they really are. And do you know, it wasn't until I came here to the States, so I'm touring at the moment, and I just assumed that you guys would have just as many CCTV cameras as we do, but I understand now that actually you don't. Whereas in the UK, you can't really go anywhere without being caught on camera. And, you know, some people have an issue with that. I'd seen it from both sides. One of my roles when I was in the police was to oversee the use of surveillance cameras in Oxfordshire, where I was working. And I've seen how incredibly useful they are when we're looking for a missing child, or when we're tracking an offender, or when we're trying to keep people safe on a Saturday night in a busy town. So I think they're quite an amazing thing. And certainly in London and on the underground, they are everywhere.
My guest is Claire McIntosh, and we're talking about her new novel, I See You. And what's the early response so far?
it's going really well, which is great because I was very nervous. My first book, I Let You Go, had sold so well, and all the reviews had talked about this big twist, and I felt under a huge amount of pressure to produce another book, another bestseller, and so I was really nervous. And when it came out in the UK, which it did quite some months ago now, I just hid for about 24 hours and didn't really want to read any newspapers or look at any reviews. And then I came out from my sort of little cave and realized that it was doing really well. It went straight into the Sunday Times top 10. And it's continued to do well and been reviewed well in the States as well, which is fantastic.
Well, it is one of the creepiest stories of the year, and Claire McIntosh wrote it, and you mentioned earlier that you got the courage to leave your career in the police when you got that two-book deal for these two books. Does this mean, with the success of these two, that maybe that deal has been extended?
Just sometime last year, I signed another two-book deal. So right now I'm working on my third novel, which should be out maybe early next year, I would imagine, in the States.
Any teasers you're going to offer on the third book, what it might be about?
Well, it's early stages, so this, you know, has everything to play for. But at the moment, it is about a woman whose parents committed suicide, a double suicide, and they never explained why. And so she is on a quest to find out why her parents killed themselves, but somebody is trying to stop her.
Mm, all right. And that one's almost finished, you say?
Oh, no, it's only just started, I'm afraid. So we've got a little bit of wait to go.
All right. Well, I have to thank you because recently I picked up a book, and there's so many books out there, and when you pick up a book by a writer that you've never heard of and you look at the back and you read the blurbs, you say, okay, I admire this writer, and if they like it, I'm going to read it. And I saw you gave a blurb to a book. I had never heard of the author, and so I started reading it, and it's called The Butcher's Hook by Janice Ellis.
Oh, Janice Ellis.
Oh, what
Isn't
a book.
Wonderful.
Unbelievable. I'd never heard of her. I take it she's well known in England.
She's amazing. She is. She used to be a television presenter. She's been lots of things and a journalist. And her daughter is Sophie Ellis-Bextor, the singer. She's very well known and in her own right as a, you know, voiceover artist and actress, all sorts of things. But this was her debut novel, and I don't normally read historical fiction, and The Butcher's Hook is historical crime, I suppose, but it just blew me away. I thought it was an incredible book.
Yeah, I agree. I'm about two-thirds of the way through, and I'm like, oh, this is going to get dark.
It's very dark, isn't it?
Yes, I can tell. The title, The Butcher's Hook, kind of gives it away because it's set in like the 1760s, 1770s, something like that. And oh, my, what a story. Well, I appreciate you giving it a blurb, Claire, because I probably would have just kind of pushed it away and not read it. And
I'm so glad. I will make sure I'll let the author know, and I'm sure she'll be delighted.
You actually know her?
I do, yes. Although I have to say that's not why I blurbed the book, and I didn't know her until I'd blurbed it, and then I got in touch to say how much I loved it, and we've met a couple of times since then.
That's very cool. Well, you mentioned that you don't usually read that kind of historical genre. What kind of stuff do you like to read?
Well, I read a lot of crime and psychological thrillers. I love Karen Slaughter books. Lisa Gardner is a real favorite. I read her latest, I've not read that yet, but the one before that called Find Her, which is just amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of crime. Sophie Hannah, a British author who writes psychological crimes. All sorts. Occasionally I'll dip into non-crime. So I love Jojo Moyes. And I really love Jodi Picoult. I love the her sort of dilemmas. You know, she takes a moral conundrum, and then she writes a book exploring really both sides of it, and they're fascinating books.
You have a character in this new story, I See You, the ex-husband, and he's a cab driver. And I think he's my favorite character in the story.
Oh, that's nice. I'm very fond of him as well.
We wonder about him a little bit, but he just seems like a really nice guy with a big heart.
I think that's probably influenced by the fact that I've never met a London cab driver who wasn't lovely. They just all seem to be happy, jolly, helpful guys. And so I guess Matt was modeled on him, on them.
When your police officer gets involved in an investigation, she's walking on eggshells. She can't make a wrong move because she's gotten in trouble before and they're keeping her on a really short leash. And, of course, this creates situations where she has to go into gray areas with her investigation. She has to do things that really aren't kosher. And then she goes to work for this gentleman. What was his name? Nick?
Nick Rampello.
He's another great character.
He's fun. He's his parents were Italian and came over as immigrants in the 60s and opened a restaurant, and he is, he's really fab. I think he's quite intimidating at first, but actually he's a really nice guy. I'd like to do more with Nick and Kelly. Actually, I said I wouldn't write a sequel, and I don't think I will of this particular story, but I would love to write more books with those two police characters in them.
Okay, we finally got you to admit that it wasn't completely impossible that we would see them again.
Maybe.
Well, we are recording this right now, actually, before the book came out in the United States. It's out in the UK, and I need to confess to listeners that I was able to get this interview with you on what they call a pre-publication tour. What is that all about? What's it like?
Oh, this is amazing. I keep pinching myself because a few years ago, you know, I was in a police uniform and I was tired and working long hours and not seeing my kids. And actually, I'm not seeing my kids right now, of course, because I'm on tour. But I am traveling the world and meeting amazing people. And it's all down to writing a book, a couple of books, which seems incredible. So I've been, I spent 4 days in Canada, mostly in Toronto and Sarnia. And then I came to Kansas City, did some TV there, did a couple of events, and then came to, where have I just been, Phoenix, Arizona. And now I'm in La Jolla in California, and then tomorrow I go to New York.
Sounds wonderful. You going to go to New York and visit Craig Burke?
I'm going to do everything. I've only got about 24 hours there, and I'm going to pack in as much as I possibly can. But yes, I'm going to be interviewed by Craig, which will be really good fun.
Well, say hello.
I will do.
It's been wonderful to have you on the program.
Oh, thank you so much for asking such great questions.
My pleasure. You've been listening to The Book Nook on WYSO. My guest has been Claire McIntosh, and her new novel, one of the creepiest books you'll ever read, is called I See You. Thanks for listening.